Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
The latest from 7 News with Michael Usher.
Welcome to the latest on the Japanese encephalitis outbreak in Australia. Tonight we take an in-depth look at the virus that has the health authorities here on some alert. We'll hear from experts in the field, the federal minister handling the response and a survivor. So what is it? The virus was first discovered in Japan in the 19th century before it spread across Asia. Known as JEV, it's been found in pigs at farms in Victoria, New South Wales and Queensland. It's carried by mosquito populations that are booming in heavy rain this summer. That's how it can spread to humans, through mosquito bites. Around 99% of JEV infections cause no symptoms. Now, some may develop an illness with fever and headache. However, in rare cases, less than 1%, those infected could develop a severe brain infection, which can be fatal. Now, there have been two deaths linked to the virus. The latest was confirmed in New South Wales. The Griffith man in his 70s died last month, a post-mortem finding he was infected with JEV. It follows the death of a Victorian man, the nation's first fatality of the rare virus this outbreak. He died in the state's north on February 28. There are now at least 15 human cases of the virus confirmed in Australia. Seven are in Victoria, three in New South Wales and one in Queensland. South Australia has confirmed at least four cases. And the Agriculture Minister, David Littleproud, joins us now. Minister, just how serious is this threat?
We're taking this very seriously. It's across the eastern seaboard and South Australia. We're working with state officials in making sure that we're identifying particularly those piggeries in those areas of high risk, working with health officials in making sure that we also have the vaccines that we had on hand, and we're working to make sure that we get more vaccines. In fact, so serious is this that the Prime Minister has put this on the agenda for National Cabinet tomorrow. They'll be briefed about the risks that are posed here by the acting Chief Health Officer and by the Chief Veterinary Officer in Australia. So we'll work through this. We're working through with the states, and I've got to say they've been working collaboratively with us to make sure that we're working as closely as we can to identify where these cases emerge and then work quickly to contain, but also make sure that individuals understand the risks that pose to them.
Does this have the potential to really explode as a problem?
Oh, look, I think you've got to put it in context. Less than 1% of those people that come into contact with a mosquito that has the virus get symptoms, and of that, around 20% of that 1% may have very serious symptoms, neurological symptoms, and unfortunately could lead to death. So we are taking it seriously, and I think that's where not only do public health officials and the Department of Agriculture need to work quickly, but also individuals. They can do a lot about wearing repellent and clothes that cover their arms and legs and making sure they just take the precautions they should. This has been in Australia since 1990, and it's fact just because of the significant weather event that we've seen water birds migrate into much of eastern Australia, bringing it from northern Australia to much of the east coast into South Australia.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, so it is normally found in the northern parts, but it is all of this weather that's seeing a rise in cases in the southeast?
It is. It's the migratory water birds that have come down, and what happens is if they bring it with them, then the mosquitoes, in fact, get it off them, and then what amplifies the virus is pigs. Horses also get it, but pigs in particular, they amplify the virus, and that's why piggeries are most at risk and those that work in piggeries. And so that's why we're saying and targeting the vaccines that we have on hand into those piggeries and those local communities. We do have scope to bring in more vaccines as and if necessary, and there'll be some decisions at National Cabinet around that to make sure that there's adequate planning. But we are monitoring it closely through all agricultural departments across the country, as well as health departments, in making sure that we report this. It's also important to understand that you can still eat pork quite safely. There is no contamination to a pork product, so you can still enjoy Australian pork, but just take the precautions if you are, particularly around those areas where there's water laying around.
So there is a vaccine available, as you say. Is that something that National Cabinet's going to have to work out, whether that vaccine program is ramped up?
Yeah, we have around 6,000 vaccines on hand, and we've put those into the targeted areas around those 21 piggeries that have been exposed. We put those with the state health officials into those areas, and in fact got another shipment very quickly. And then obviously National Cabinet will work through further purchasing of these vaccines and to make sure that we have them on hand if this does continue to escalate. We are confident that the fact that over the last couple of days we've only seen no increase in the number of piggeries that have been impacted gives us some comfort, but not enough to say that we're out of the woods. And that's why vigilance is important, not just by state and federal health officials, but also by individuals in these areas.
I guess a warning also for our medical professionals too, to be on the lookout for symptoms. They may dismiss that and not quite diagnose it quickly.
Yeah, I think we've got very good coordination with the state public health officials in understanding those areas and understanding the symptoms. And many of those is just simply around a stiff neck, having flu-like symptoms, fever, vomiting. And then obviously that's then is a trigger, because it is a reportable virus by health officials. So they're on notice, and that's why we've been able to understand exactly where it is across the East Coast and into South Australia, and then make sure that if there are fatalities, we're able to understand whether it is in fact Japanese encephalitis. So there's a lot being done behind the scenes, and I've got to say the states have been exemplary in this, and health officials across the country have been working with the Chief Health Officer in Canberra and the Chief Veterinary Officer in making sure that the coordinated approach is there. And that's why we've escalated to National Cabinet, to make sure this isn't another front that Australia has to face, and it gets broader than what it is now, but we all have to be vigilant.
We don't want another front right now, that's for sure. All right. Agriculture Minister David Littleproud, thank you so much for talking to us tonight. And a mother in regional Victoria says a mosquito bite left her four-month-old baby in intensive care, suffering several seizures a day. Little Sam Gilliland is one of several Victorians suspected to have been infected with Japanese encephalitis. He was bitten during an Australia Day getaway near Wodonga. Symptoms became clear 2 weeks later.
To witness that, it breaks my heart. I honestly thought we weren't going to make it to the hospital.
His mum set up a GoFundMe page to help cover ongoing medical costs. And for those who've survived encephalitis, there can be lifelong complications. Joining me in the studio is Jeff Martin, who was diagnosed with the illness in 2018. Jeff, thanks for coming in.
Pleasure.
Give us your first-hand experience. How did you get struck down?
Oh, first it was just like a viral flu. And I was in bed for a week and my son said, "Dad, you've never been sick for 5 days." And then it just disappeared and I felt ready to go to work, and then the migraine from hell just came in. And I don't know if you've ever had a really bad hangover, but it was like that for the next 15 days, non-stop, really painful.
So you go to the doctor, what do they say?
Well, the doctor said, "I think you should go get it checked out at the hospital." My GP of 20 years knew me well, never saw me complain, and I was really complaining. And they tested me, gave me some fluid and sent me home. Take a Bex and lie down kind of response.
So how long to actually diagnose it then?
It was on my third entry into the hospital. I was sent home a second time, and they're about to send me home a third time when they'd actually taken a spinal tap of the fluid in my spine, which then, when they're about to send me home a third time, they finally found the herpes simplex 1 virus, which is the virus that I had in my brain that was causing the inflammation.
So is it because it's that rare, it's not diagnosed quickly, or are the symptoms tricky? Do they cross over with other
things? Look, sometimes you present well. The second time I presented to hospital, I was really sick and I felt a little bit better, but the first and the third time I was really sick. And, it's a bit of a luck of the draw, but also there needs to be greater awareness. If you've got a long-going headache in your head, treat it seriously and advocate for yourself. And my doctor, my GP, advocated for me.
Yeah. What have been the implications or the longer term complications for you?
Well, it's effectively a brain injury. My brain expanded, it burst, I had a major hemorrhage like you have in a stroke. I missed a coma and I was able to walk and talk, so I was very lucky actually. I'm quite a lucky survivor. And then I had an acquired brain injury and I was off work for 4 months. And then I went back to work on a graduated return to work. Over another 6 months, I was exhausted and fatigued, had to sleep, a lot of things I couldn't do. And then 14 months later, I had the onset of seizures from the scarring in my brain.
Really?
So I'm now epileptic as a result.
And that continues?
That continues, but since my second one, I've been on medication after number two, and it's been, touch wood, two years and 3 months on the medication, and I've had no repeats.
I'm glad you can explain it, because obviously with the advent now of this Japanese encephalitis, which has got the government and the health authorities extremely worried at the moment, we don't hear a lot about the encephalitis at all. So it's important to get the message out of what it actually is. And then you've lived with the complications of it and how severe it was. How long were you in hospital originally?
22 days, which was the time it took them to administer the antivirals, which in my case could be treated to reduce the herpes infestation of my brain.
Now, JEV, that's what we're going to hear a lot about, the Japanese version, it is rare, there's no doubt about that, but what's your warning to people in those risk areas? With all this weather, it shifted, something that exists in our north, but now it's not. We have South Australia, Victoria as well. What's your warning to people and what to look out for?
Look, I think it's a fairly new thing, so awareness I'm still learning, and it's all about wearing clothes which are long, maybe spraying yourself and staying away from stagnant water. But the main thing is, if you are feeling ill and you do have an ongoing headache and it's not normal, get it seen to, and don't take no for an answer. Advocate for yourself.
We've got a lot of Australians in really adverse conditions right now. They're going to be around a lot of stagnant water.
Yes.
They're disconnected at the moment. They're not necessarily near their GP or hospitals. That's a concern. You'd feel for them and what you've been through.
Well, yes, and I heard about the sad news today, and my heart really goes out to not only obviously the victims, but really the families around them, because this is a disease of carers. It impacts the carers as much, if not more, than those who've suffered it, as it did my carers and my workmates, my boss, everyone.
Well, you're a survivor of encephalitis, which is the most important thing.
So. I'm here to tell the tale, and life doesn't end with an illness. You learn to live with it, and you learn to make the most of every day and reduce your risk and manage your health.
And look out for the warnings at this stage. Hey, Geoff Martin, good to have you in the studio.
Thank you very much,
Mike. Thank you.
Cheers.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Well, let's bring in Dr. Ava Easton, a global expert in this field and chief executive of the Encephalitis Society. Dr. Easton, thanks for joining me tonight.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
Now, the virus is usually found in Asia and I think Western Pacific regions. We've previously had it in our far north, as we've just been talking about tonight. Are you surprised at the spread of cases in Australia in the past week?
Yes, I think I am. I think we've all learnt lessons from COVID that viruses tend to surprise us when we least expect it. But as you say, we've already seen these cases of Japanese encephalitis, the first for many in several years. And of course, many of the viruses that are responsible for encephalitis and the hosts responsible for transmitting them, in this case, mosquitoes, are going to be proliferating during these floods.
Now, the chance of JEV becoming severe is low. We should be clear about that. But if someone develops encephalitis in the brain, what are the chances of survival?
Yeah, as you say, we don't want to be alarmist. Some people who contract the virus will only have mild symptoms, but it is a very serious illness. And with nearly a third of those who contract an encephalitis from this virus, unfortunately, will die. And a further third to 50% can often be left with life-changing disabilities.
some of the cases here, the two confirmed deaths that we've had so far in recent times have taken some time to be confirmed. In fact, one of them today announced after it came out of a post-mortem examination. Is it a difficult thing to diagnose up front? We heard from our previous guest who it took him a couple of goes in hospital before and a spinal tap before he was actually diagnosed with it. Is it a tricky one, or is it just because it's rare, it's not picked up quickly?
Oh, that's a great question. Encephalitis generally can be difficult to diagnose and to treat. I think that's why raising awareness on programmes like yours is so important. We know that this is happening in Australia right now, and I think if people are admitted to hospital with behavioural change, with fever, with severe head pain, then I think we need to be thinking neurology and testing for Japanese encephalitis in these patients as quickly as possible.
Yeah. And the explanations, we heard our agriculture minister just before talked to us about we've got these extraordinary conditions in Australia right now that's pushed the virus south in areas where it hasn't been, and that's come from migratory birds as well, and then mosquitoes coming into contact with them. Experts pointing to climate change. Have you witnessed similar patterns, similar outbreaks in other countries where the virus hasn't been before?
Well, not specifically with Japanese encephalitis that I can recall, but I think, you know, we have with other viruses. Zika is a virus appointing question, and an example that comes to mind. As mosquitoes that transmitted that virus moved into new communities where these communities didn't have an innate autoimmunity, they hadn't built up any defences towards the virus, it had profound and life-changing consequences for the new communities where the mosquitoes had moved to and began to inhabit. So I think we have seen it with other viruses.
And is it likely to then disappear from those communities, or once it's in a new area, it learns how to survive quite well?
Yeah, I think it might be here to stay. I think it's early days. I don't think we know. But I think what we do need to remember is that we live in what we call a One Health world. So where our interactions with the climate and the animals that we coexist with are going to impact on our human health.
I'd ask you, with all of your expertise, is there advice for people to avoid catching the virus? But it sounds very difficult. Is there clear advice, or is it more about diagnosing it fast?
I think diagnosing it is really important, but there's lots that people can do to prevent themselves from catching it. There is no cure, there is no treatment for this disease, but people can take precautions such as wearing mosquito repellent, wearing long sleeves and trousers to avoid being bitten by mosquitoes, and ensuring that their homes, their communities, their neighbourhoods, their backyards are free from stagnant water, because this is where mosquitoes gather and where they want to lay their eggs. And we've also got to remember that there are safe and effective vaccines for Japanese encephalitis. So those who might be at increased risk in Australia should be seeking advice as to whether they should go for the vaccination.
I don't know whether you heard the Agriculture Minister speak to me at the beginning of our show, but he said this was interesting. It's actually been taken to our National Cabinet this week, which is the highest level of authority in Australia, and that's where urgent decisions are made. So it's certainly been pushed right up the chain as a problem in this country. Do you think that's a good move?
I think it's really important. World Encephalitis Day was just a few days before this outbreak took place. And actually, we found it really hard to push this up the agenda of policymakers and health professionals. Right. And so it's so important that we raise awareness about encephalitis generally, but certainly right now in Australia with this outbreak.
All right. It's been very interesting to get your insight. You're an expert in it, so you've given us some good advice. Dr. Ava Easton joining us from the UK tonight. Thanks for your time.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Well, there you go. That's our special on encephalitis with some new details in there and hopefully some good advice. Thanks for your company. I'm Michael Usher. Good night.